You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It is Wednesday, the 15th of May, 2024. While the federal budget was delivered last night, a projected $9.3 billion surplus with cost of living relief, including tax cuts and energy and rent rebates. We've got a panel to discuss the implication on interest rates, inflation and the share market. So let's start our analysis with former RBA Assistant Governor, now Westpac Chief Economist, Lucy Ellis. Lucy Ellis, thank you very much for joining us. Will cost of living relief add to or ease inflation as the government expects?
The government's designed a lot of its cost of living packages to reduce measured inflation by the end of the year. That's what we expected in our own forecasts. And so we do think that their inflation forecast for the end of the year is achievable. The real question is how much the additional money in people's pockets adds to demand and how much the other additional spending adds to demand. But in the short term, we are going to see lower measured inflation because that's the way the government has designed its policies.
Okay, so what do you think then the Reserve Bank will think about all of this, and could it still lead to lower interest rates by Christmas?
I think the Reserve Bank will have expected that this is what the government was going to try to do. Although the Reserve Bank's inflation forecasts are higher, that's because they don't factor in policies until they've been announced. But our estimate of what the government was going to do was broadly in line with what we expected. We think that this will be in line with what they were hoping to achieve in terms of lower inflation. We don't think this really shifts the dial in terms of the RBA's actions.
So what is Westpac's forecast for when the first cut in interest rates will be?
We expect that the Reserve Bank will have seen enough of a decline in inflation to start cutting rates by November and then keep cutting a little bit moderately through next year until they finally get to 3.1% by the end of the year.
Looking ahead, is there any prospect of further budget repair, and what are the implications of this?
Well, Ricardo, let's put this in perspective. The government's just announced that they've recorded a second successive surplus. The budget is expected to swing into deficit, partly because of the additional spending that they are doing, but they're expecting a 1% of GDP surplus. That's not that big relative to most peer economies. And we know that by the time we get to year's end, they will have had revenue surprises because iron ore prices won't fall as much as they usually assume. There are a number of other aspects of conservative assumptions that they quite properly make in the budget. So, you know, while the medium term prospects for, you know, higher spending to deal with our, you know, ageing population, to deal with the cost blowouts in the NDIS all needed to be dealt with, we're starting from a much better fiscal position than most other economies.
And so in a few words, how would you describe this budget?
I would say the government is treading a fine line in order to try to keep the economy on that narrow path. It wants to provide stimulus to household sector to support people who have been struggling with high cost of living, a rising tax take, as well as rising interest rates. But they don't want to put too much stimulus in that they actually end up stimulating the economy too much and keeping inflation too high. It's a fine line, and the government is trying to tread that line.
That is Lucy Ellis there, the Chief Economist of Westpac. Also part of our panel is Martin Fu. He is the lead analyst at S&P Global Ratings. Martin, first of all, how would you describe this budget?
First of all, hello, Ricardo, and thank you for having me on your show. So we would describe this budget as an economic strategy pivot, and a substantial one at that. So what I mean by this is that for the past 2 years, the Australian government has done a pretty commendable job at keeping a lid on new discretionary spending as it prioritised the fight against inflation. And I think Australia is probably the envy of many other countries by reporting two consecutive budget surpluses. But to a large extent, what we've said is that these surpluses were due to short-term cyclical commodity export prices, and that those have papered over some very sizable and structural spending pressures. And now, as we head into probable election season, the government is starting to loosen the purse strings. And that means, as Treasurer Jim Chalmers has said, The budget makes winners of pretty much everyone, including taxpayers, renters, university students, and even the resource sector. And all of this will come at the cost of a little bit more debt and a little bit more inflation.
So you mentioned inflation there. To what extent do you think this budget will add to inflation and why?
We think the budget will be slightly inflationary, but to understand why, you really have to think about the first and second order effects here. So the first order effect is when the government offers something like a $300 energy rebate that is automatically applied to electricity bills. It does mechanically reduce the measured price of electricity. And in fact, the Australian Bureau of Statistics has confirmed that this is the way that its inflation indices do work in practice. But the second order effect is this. Inflation tends to arise when you see supply and demand imbalances in the economy. So the risk here is that consumers may well take that $300 rebate and spend it in other parts of the economy, thereby driving up aggregate demand. And in addition, if you assume that these energy rebates are temporary, then what they really do is just shift around the level of prices rather than the average rate of price growth. So in other words, what you might see is a lower rate of price growth next year, but that will be compensated by a higher rate of price growth in the subsequent year once the rebates expire. And to be clear, Ricardo, we're really just talking about the federal budget here. If you add up what the states are doing, the state of Western Australia has announced a $400 electricity credit per household. For Queensland, it's $1,000. No doubt there will be more subsidies when the other states release their budgets over the next couple of weeks. And these will all have the same effect of pumping money and demand into the macroeconomy.
Okay, so what do you think this all means for interest rates then, when many economists were predicting rates to start falling at the end of the year?
Right. So we have a slightly different view. We think the Reserve Bank will keep interest rates on hold at 4.35% for the remainder of 2024. The reason is that inflation is proving to be sticky. Core inflation, which is the RBA's preferred measure, is still tracking at a pretty elevated 4% through the first quarter of 2024. And yesterday's slightly inflationary budget will make it just a tiny bit more challenging for the RBA to get a handle on this inflation. Now, to be clear, Ricardo, this is actually not just about yesterday's budget. The other big story here is that high inflation is proving more persistent than expected in other major economies, including the United States. So we think that this delays US Fed rate cuts until at least the fourth quarter, the final quarter of 2024. And because the Reserve Bank of Australia tends to be sensitive to interest rate differentials with the US and the risk of a weaker Australian currency, that may also cause the RBA to hold fire. So all in all, interest rates higher for longer.
Still, do you think the government is being conservative when it comes to future assumptions like commodity prices, especially iron ore? And what are the implications of that?
We think the government is a little conservative, yes, but understandably so. So, the long story short here is that the budget board balance is forecast to swing from a surplus to a deficit next year. And those cash deficits could average about 1 to 1.5% of GDP over the forward estimates. And in fact, if you add back the so-called off-budget spending, which we like to do, we could be looking at structural deficits in the order of 1.5 to 2% of GDP. But we also need to remember that past Treasury forecasts have repeatedly been on the cautious side. So, for instance, the budget result for the current financial year, which will end in 6 weeks' time, came out $23 billion stronger than expected just 12 months ago. The reason for this is the Australian Treasury tends to make a technical assumption that iron ore prices will quickly drop to the long-run average of about $60 per tonne, whereas our house view tends to assume that maybe $90 or $100 per tonne is more realistic in the long run. So, Ricardo, there is room for budget outperformance here, but and stronger commodity prices, if they eventuate, they could well result in stronger nominal GDP and a smaller headline deficit. But we would say that, this type of prudence does make sense when you're running a small open economy that is exposed to a volatile international commodity market. And as I've mentioned earlier, I think the broader risk is that politicians will tend to match temporary upswings in revenue with permanent spending increases, and that could leave Australia with less room for policy maneuver if and when the next downturn comes.
Despite all of that and the budget supports Australia's AAA credit rating.
All in all, Ricardo, we're relatively comfortable with the AAA rating. As a reminder, Australia is one of just 11 countries that still carries a AAA out of the 140 or 150 or so that we rate across the world. And that is a reflection of the very high regard in which we hold Australia's institutions, its credible monetary policy, and its relatively low but rising net public debt. So we think as long as fiscal deficits stay small and contained, Australia will keep its AAA rating for the foreseeable future.
That is Martin Fu there from S&P Global Ratings. Our next analyst is Saul Eslake. He's an economist, but today we also saw some data on the level of pay rises Australians were getting because the wage price index rose by less than expected 4.1% in the year to the March quarter. So in addition to the budget, what does all of this say about the economy and where interest rates are going? For more, I spoke with Saul Eslake. So let's start with wages and the data out today at 4.1%. It's a bit lower than what the market was expecting for the year. Has wages growth peaked?
I think it probably has. The increase in the March quarter itself was the smallest quarterly increase since the March quarter of 2022, and the annual rate of 4.1% was just a tad below the Reserve Bank's recent forecast of 4.2. And it would be consistent with the slowing in the labor market that the Reserve Bank and others have observed, which shows up more in reduced hours worked and reduced vacancies than so far in lower employment or higher unemployment. But they're all signs that labor market tightness is easing, and you would expect in that context that wages growth would slow a bit, as today's data confirms that it has.
Historically, though, how does it compare? And how would businesses be feeling about this? I mean, aren't they still facing labor cost pressures, especially smaller businesses?
Well, yes, they are. In the same way that households are still facing cost of living pressures through rising prices. But the key point is that those pressures are beginning to ease. They need to ease further because they're still significant, but at least the movement is in the right direction. And that's much more preferable than if they had been continuing to escalate.
How does this feed through to inflation?
Well, it depends on the extent to which businesses are able to pass it on to consumers in the form of higher prices. And as demand weakens, which it's expected to do, businesses' ability to pass cost increases on to their customers will accordingly lessen. And that's part of how we get to lower inflation. The other important factor here, however, as the Reserve Bank has repeatedly emphasized, is that wages is only one of the things that determines labor costs for business. The other is productivity. And part of the reason why businesses have experienced severe cost pressures, which they've passed on to their consumers in the form of higher prices over the last couple of years, is that while wages growth has been picking up, productivity growth has been abysmal. Indeed, for a couple of years, it was negative. Now, it did start to turn around in the second half of last year, and the Reserve Bank is assuming that that trend will continue, so that if productivity growth continues to improve, then the pressure on businesses to pass labor cost increases onto their customers in the form of higher prices will continue to abate.
So, in other words, productivity is key here then. Is there anything in the budget, or was there anything in the budget to suggest that we would see a pickup in productivity?
Well, apart from the Treasury assuming it, like the Reserve Bank is, no. There weren't any measures in the budget that you could say specifically designed to improve productivity. And frankly, I wouldn't expect much in a budget. I mean, productivity growth is going to improve through measures such as eliminating non-compete clauses in contracts or allowing greater competition and reducing the exercise of monopoly power to mark up prices. And over the longer term, investments in education and skills training that will make workers more productive. I would argue productivity growth in Australia won't be helped by policy measures that encourage labor and capital to move into low productivity activities, which in Australia, contrary to what the government appears to think, includes manufacturing. In the US, in Japan, in Europe, in some other countries which are using tax incentives and subsidies to encourage increased investment in manufacturing. Manufacturing has higher labor productivity than the average, and hence doing that can actually boost overall productivity. But Australia is one of a handful of countries where productivity in manufacturing is below the average for all industries. So policies such as those under the heading of Future Made in Australia, which encourage labor and capital to move into manufacturing, all else being equal, will result in lower labor productivity overall, and hence lower standards of living for Australians. So one of the areas of the budget about which I'm a bit skeptical is the amount of money that's going to be used under the heading of Future Made in Australia to encourage resources to move into a low productivity form of activity. Now, when it comes to speeding the transition to a net zero carbon economy, I'm okay with that because I accept that it's not going to happen at the required speed purely by the private sector on its own. There does need to be government involvement in that to share some of the risks that are associated with it. But when it comes to things like encouraging the manufacture of solar panels, which we could easily import from our friends, the Americans, courtesy of the squillions of taxpayer dollars that they're putting into it, why should we be wasting our own taxpayers' dollars in that direction simply because other countries are doing it?
You've mentioned a fair bit there about Future Made in Australia. In general terms, when you look at the budget at its entirety, how would you describe it in just a few words? And does it change the inflation outlook? In other words, do you think it adds to inflation, or as the government thinks, it'll help inflation come down faster than what the RBA thinks?
On this, I think it will help the inflation to come down faster than the Reserve Bank's forecasts. Remembering, as the Reserve Bank itself explicitly acknowledged last week, that their forecast did not make any allowance for a continuation of the electricity bill relief or the cost of rental housing for pensioners relief that had been in last year's budget, and which we now know will be extended in the case of electricity bills to everyone rather than just those who you might argue were in need of it through this year's budget. So I accept that there will be a mechanical reduction in inflation, as the Treasurer calls it, and there might be some longer term benefits because of the number of things whose prices are indexed to movements in the CPI, including, of course, wages, where the Fair Work Commission gives a great deal of emphasis to movements in the CPI in deciding by how much it increases the minimum wage. Offsetting that to some extent may be the additional spending on other goods and services that's funded by the cash that governments are giving to households. But I suspect that although there will be some inflationary impact from that, it won't fully offset the downward impact on inflation that the government's measures will have.
And finally, then, the implication for interest rates. Does it mean we will likely see a rate cut before Christmas?
I don't believe that we will. And part of the reason for saying that is that the Reserve Bank hasn't put interest rates up by as much as other countries, such as the United States, Canada, the Eurozone, the UK, and maybe even New Zealand. And so you wouldn't expect inflation to come down as quickly here as in some of those other countries. Moreover, in Australia, taxpayers are getting the equivalent in aggregate of 225 basis point rate cuts, courtesy of the tax cuts that have been rejigged by the government in the lead up to this budget. So I can't see the Reserve Bank doubling up on that. My view since late last year has been and remains that the first cut in interest rates won't come before February next year. It may well come before the next election, depending on when that's held, but I'd be surprised if it comes this year.
That is economist Saul Eslake there.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On the Money podcast.
So the Australian share market did rise. The S&P ASX 200 up 0.35% to 7,753 for all the day's market action. I spoke with Hebe Chen, an analyst at IG Markets.
Well, I have to say that budget last night do have quite significant impact on the Australian stock market today. If you're looking at the sector-wise, we have three best performing sector, mining sector here, and the property sector. They are all the sectors believed to benefit from last night's budget. In terms of company-wise, that the 8 out of 10 best performing companies are coming from the mining sector, including the BHP, which is the heavyweight for the index. They're jumping up as much as 2%, one of the best data in the, over a month.
What is it about the miners? Why are they doing so well and responding so positively to the budget?
First of all, is the vision the budget is setting up is that the Australian miners is capitalize the energy transitions. And particularly to be more specific is that in terms of sector like a green business, they are the one that benefit the most. We do seeing like a $7 billion invest incentives in the critical minerals and also as well as the hydrogen energies. They are all the sectors that benefit the most from the budget last night. And they are the sectors which sort of painting quite a rosy and positive outlook for the Aussie players.
Okay. Any other sectors that are winners and losers?
Well, apart from mining, I think the biggest winners is health and the property sector because the cost of living, the support measures basically just putting money back into the household's pocket to spend, so which benefit the retail and they help them to pay for higher rent, which sort of benefit the real estate sector as well.
There's a lot of discussion about whether the budget is inflationary or not and the implication for interest rates. What's the market's position on this?
Well, I think it's quite clear the market do not buy in the ideas that the budget will help to bring down the inflation. Neither do the ideas that the inflation will back to the RBA's target by the end of 2024. And one of the strong evidence is that the market is still pricing in that we are likely to see another hike in September and the first rate cut by the RBA will likely be out for 2024. I think the major idea is that the market that we are sort of freeing or the government is trying to freeing more money into the market and there definitely will be somewhere to push the price even higher. So far that overall the market is expecting both the inflation and the interest rate will stay in Australia higher for longer.
And finally, where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Well, I think after last night's budget, I also still share the optimism about the green energies in Australia because we do have the benefit vantage layer, also having the support from the government. In the currency, so seeing the Aussie dollar will likely shine for the other currencies. As I say, the inflation is higher if we are still expecting us in a position to keeping the interest rate elevated, even with another hike, they were giving the chance for the Aussie dollars to keep pushing higher compared to the other currencies.
PB Chen there from IG Markets.
This SBS On The Money stream is provided for informational purposes only. The content in this stream should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.